Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives, a lively, educational, and issues-driven radio show designed to tell another side of the story, to focus on and humanize crime victims, to enlighten and shine the spotlight on organizations and service providers, and to assist those who walk the path with us. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice, your host. And I also have with me this evening my co-host, Delilah Jones, president of Imagine Publicity. And so I say good evening again to you, to everyone, and welcome. And tonight's show is something I've been very much looking forward to. We have a change of pace from crime this evening, and I will welcome our guest personally in just a minute, as well as bring Delilah in. But I wanted to mention to you that by way of preparation for our theme this evening, we have a radio show of sorts that we want to feature that helps people with a variety of disabilities, and it's very unique. And just by way of introduction, I wanted to say that I don't usually talk about what I do for a living. That's my work and my paid job, and this is my passion. But there are those times when the two intersect. And this is one of those times, and I'm very excited and I'm very proud to have a very special guest on by the name of Diane Weaver Dunn, who is going to tell us about the company, the endeavor that she is in charge of. But before I do that, let me bring in my friend, my co-pilot, and my can't-do-without professional, Delilah Jones. Come on in. Good evening. How are you?
Hi. Doing great. Doing great tonight. How are you doing up here in Connecticut?
We're doing just fine. We're at a little chilly 37 degrees, but hey, you know, I might be going to warmer weather, so things are good, you know. And speaking of warm, I think that we have a very warm and fuzzy guest this evening, because I don't think she could do her job as well as she does if we didn't have that type of personality. And with you being a social media person, Delilah, and being on the radio as much as you are, I think that you share my enthusiasm for our guest, don't you?
Yes. I'm very excited to have Diane on. I think she's really performing in her whole station much needed service, and I applaud everything that she's doing.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let me acquaint our audience, our national audience, with just a little bit of background. And well, why don't I just have her come on in? Diane, welcome. Thank you so much for being on Shattered Lives. It's a pleasure to have you.
Well, hi, Donna and Delilah. Thank you so much for having me tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity to share information about Chris Radio.
Well, that's great. Would you mind if I just acquaint people with a little bit about your bio, and then we can get rolling?
Absolutely.
Sure. And, you know, if I make a mistake, be sure to correct me, because I make a mistake at least once a month. So in any case, Diane is an award-winning journalist who currently oversees CRIS Radio, which stands for Connecticut Radio Information Systems. And she was an interim and managing editor of the Harvard Business Journal and the news editor for Education World, which was an online education magazine. She's a journalist by profession and has written for the Hartford Current and the Connecticut Law Tribune. She is also an adjunct professor at the University of Hartford for the past 7 years, teaching communications. And I believe she took over CRIS Radio in 2010. And may I say, from the looks of things and what I've heard and what I've seen, it's never been the same again, and that's meant to be positive. It used to be, much less than what it was, although, you know, each person has their own take on how they manage a company. But I just think Diane has brought it to a whole nother level, and I'm excited for her to be able to tell us all about it. So, Diane, would you mind if I do a little bit of Blindness 101? That's part of the people that you serve. Didn't Chris Rebeau initially began for people who were visually impaired or legally blind? Isn't that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And I do want to just correct you on one thing about the bio. I am no longer an adjunct at the University of Hartford. I was there for 7 years, and I moved on to focus primarily on the journalism career. But I did do that in between, working as a journalist. So.
Okay.
So people will say, well, gee, she's not there anymore. Well, no, I'm not. I'm not an adjunct professor anymore. Not enough time in the day.
Well, I certainly understand that, but you know, all of those kinds of endeavors certainly enhance our credentials, and I'm sure you were a stellar teacher. But with respect to just framing that, in case people are not aware, for the past 13 years, I have been associated with what used to be the oldest independent agency for the blind in the country since 1893. And then our governor sought to consolidate services, and now we are an umbrella industry. And there's a lot of frankly, a lot of misinformation about people who are blind or visually impaired. And I just want to give a really brief definition. There's a lot of different eye diseases and causes that make people have difficulty with regard to their sight. But the legal definition across the board is that someone is legally blind if their vision is 20/200 with correction, meaning like with the glasses or magnification in their better eye. And there's no such thing as being legally blind in one eye. It has to be both eyes. And what that means, 20/200, is that someone that has 20/20 vision, or very good vision, if you're standing somewhere and you're looking, say, 200 yards in front of you, you could see very fine detail. But for a person that is legally blind, they would have to see that same degree of detail by standing 20 feet away for what you can see clearly at 200 feet, okay? So that's just kind of a benchmark. And so not only do people who are totally blind make use of Chris Rebeau, but also people that are visually impaired and a number of different disabilities. So just with that in mind, our agency has a very close affiliation with Chris Rebeau. In fact, they were housed in the same building where we are. So with that said, Diane, why don't you give us perhaps an overview, if you would like, or you can tell us some of your talking points, and then we can get into some of the exciting new technologies, too, that you've introduced.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Donna. As a matter of fact, I just want to add to what you just said, that Chris Rebeau has had a very, very close relationship with the Connecticut State Board of Education and Services to the Blind. In fact, the brainchild of Chris Rebeau came from your a former executive director called William Patton. And this is back in the late 70s, and he believed that there needed to be some form of an alternative to the print newspapers, timely alternative, so that people who are not able to read the newspaper would at least have that access to that information on a daily basis. So he was one of the key founders, really, of Chris Rebeau. So we go back with a great, strong connection, and we continue to have a terrific relationship with the Board of Education and Services for the Blind. So,
just wanted to put in that, to interject, excuse me for interrupting, that just because you have a visual impairment or maybe blind or have any other disability, this is not the end of your life. This is not a reason to consider yourself having a shattered life. I view that having any one of these disabilities, including myself with cerebral palsy, if your organization can help enhance my life in terms of keeping me up to date with what's going on in the world, it's for the betterment, and it's not something to think of in the negative sense.
Well, and that's our goal, too, is that Chris Radio really hopes, and we understand from many of our listeners, that we really and truly do enhance the quality of their lives. We reduce their sense of isolation because we actually read and record and broadcast full articles that are published in newspapers and magazines. In fact, over 70 newspapers and magazines, including children's magazines, is part of our programming. So folks can... who are require an alternative to print information, we are able to broadcast that, and it truly does enhance their lives. So it's all about having a high-quality life, and we're hoping that we're helping to provide some measure of improving, you know, the quality of life of those who cannot read information, printed words, rather.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So Chris Radio, though, traditionally what we did was we would focus on reading and broadcasting newspapers, articles featured in newspapers and magazines, primarily for the general public, which would be, and we focused on adults. So for 32 and a half years of our 34-year existence, that's exactly what we focused on. We broadcasted these 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, articles featured in a number of newspapers and magazines, some local and some and many national. And but this is a huge difference and a huge quantum leap from where we started. We started with a two-hour broadcast that could only be heard in Greater Hartford. Now we broadcast our regular programs that can be heard on the Internet daily, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at www.chrisradio, and that's chrisradio.org. And then about a year and a half ago, right after shortly after I joined Chris Radio, the board of directors and were incredibly visionary. They wanted to fill unmet needs that Chris Radio could expand our services for. So what we decided was that, and there were a number of unmet needs that we identified in the community. One was children's programming. And so one of our huge endeavors over the last 2 years is to create a way for children to have access to children's magazines. For children who have not only who might have a visual disability, but also a physical, an emotional, a learning, or an intellectual disability. So we wanted to provide access for those children of these about maybe 20 magazines. What's really critical about what we're doing, though, and is different, even though technology is taking huge leaps and bounds to improve, is that we still believe that the human narration will provide children with not only a more pleasant experience, but research is showing us that kids will retain information more so if they hear a person reading it. And that those reasons are pretty obvious. People read with emotion. They read with inflection and syntax. The kids can pick up on those different cues. And therefore, the human narration is actually a big selling point for what we're doing.
And maybe it reminds them of their parents reading to them, you know, or somehow comforting to have that human touch, as you say. And just to interject a little bit, you've also had some famous broadcasters, none other than our former governor, M. Jody Rao, was a volunteer for Chris Radio, so she did her share of reading to people too as well, right?
Absolutely, and also Senator Edith Craig was one of our regular volunteers as well.
Yes,
that's absolutely correct. And in fact, though, talking about folks who are local celebrities, we also have a few commercially prominent broadcasters. One was a former NBC Connecticut anchor person, Joanne Nesty. She continues to be a volunteer, and she celebrated 30 years last year of being a regular volunteer for 30 consecutive years. And then Jim McPherson, yeah, who's at WTIC, and he also is
the car doctor guy, right?
The car doctor at WTIC, exactly. He has been with us. He was our very first volunteer reader for 34 years ago. So,
he's got a radio voice for sure. He's got a radio voice for sure.
You're talking about
Jim McPherson.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, too, we have a lot of incredibly talented volunteers. But I want to shine some light on our volunteers. We have about 350 volunteers, and these folks are incredibly dedicated. And without their volunteer service and their on-air talent, we would not be able to record, you know, 70 newspapers and magazines. It would be impossible, and it would be an incredibly cost-prohibitive endeavor. So we are very grateful to the dedication of these volunteers.
How does that work? Is it a rotation schedule?
I'm sorry.
Is it a rotation schedule that you have worked out, you know, like every week they rotate? I know it's 24/7, correct? But how do you coordinate 350 people doing these things?
well, I'll tell you, it's the feat of our operations director, Scott Becker, who manages all of this. But we also have coordinators in four other satellite studios. So we have the Broadcast Center in Windsor, Connecticut, but we also have satellite studios in Norwich, in Danbury, in Trumbull, and in West Haven. And in all these programs, what we do is we go live twice a day with the local newspapers. So in the morning, newspaper is broadcast first thing in the morning from 8 to 9 o'clock. It's live. And our morning sports is actually a lot precedes that, 7:30 to 8. So we do have a very regular schedule. And what we do is we schedule different volunteers to be in to, you know, broadcast those live programs. I do want to point out, though, that we also do have volunteers who are also listeners. They are not only legally blind, they are completely blind, yet they're able to actually produce live news programs with all of the technology, the broadcast boards, and they're able to manage that. They read the weather in Braille. They are able to hit the right cues so that the PSAs come up on the quarter of the hour, on the half hour, and then 45 minutes into the program, and then they're able to close it with the right PSA and the right music and intros. So it's pretty impressive what they can
do. Yes, it is. Technology for people who are blind, you know, it equips them to do so many things that I think people have, unless you know someone, you know, a colleague or a family member who has that particular disability, people out there in general have no idea what is available in terms of technology for this particular disability. So it is incredible, isn't it?
It really is incredible.
Yeah.
And then for the balance of our programming, the other 24 hours a day, our volunteers come in and pre-record the articles. So let's say People Magazine, Good Housekeeping, National Geographic, Smithsonian, you name it. We also do the Wall Street Journal, obviously, and USA Today. So all of those other publications, a lot of those are pre-recorded, and then they're digitally, we put them into our 24-hour sequence.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that works.
Can you be honest now? Can you tell me, is the reading of the obituary still one of the most popular?
Absolutely. Well, we have our two favorite programs. And you know how we find out? We find out because if we goof up, people call us and complain. So our other mode besides the obituaries, and you know, too, that's really a community link. People want to know what's going on in their community. So it's important that people are able to, you know, hear what's happening in their neighborhood and if there's a neighbor that's passed or whatever. But the other very popular program would be the store circulars. People want to know what's on sale, just like everybody else. They want to know pork chops are cheaper this week than they were last week. And, you know, it's it's important for everybody, and people especially who are living on a fixed income, it's very, very important. So,
that and being part of a programming, but yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. In fact, actually, the state of Vermont, their division of the blind, contacted us and asked us if we would record some of their store circulars for one of their regions so that their community would be able to access the store circulars in an audio format. So we've actually been doing that for them as well for about a year and a half now.
And, that's great.
Yeah, it's very important for them. So
well, I wondered, could you tell us about the scope of how far does your broadcast reach? And then are there, for all the 50 states, is there a Chris Radio in other representative states as well?
Well, there's no Chris Radio in other states, but there are other radio reading services throughout the nation. So, for example, Chris Radio, the traditional broadcast subcarrier frequency, and this is how all of the other radio reading services operate, we can really only be heard with a broadcast traditional radio, which is really 60-year-old technology, that can be heard on those old-fashioned radios in Connecticut. However, but because now we offer on-demand programming, so let's say somebody wants to hear People Magazine, they can actually go to our website, subscribe to Chris Radio On Demand, which is really a modest fee because, again, we're a nonprofit. We have to pay for our own IT costs. So for $30 a year, they can download any of our 70 newspapers and magazines, unlimited, download it onto either their computer, a smartphone, an iPad, on any device, MP3 player, any device they want. So they can also hear it on demand. So the way we're able to reach people throughout the nation is people can access us either the on-demand or they can hear us live, listen now, go to our Chris Radio website and click listen now, and they can hear our broadcast.
Just like we're doing right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what you're doing right now. Exactly.
Oh, that's great. I just love it. Delilah, do you have any particular questions at this juncture? Just wanted you to come in if
I wasn't aware that you did so many magazines and everything. I did have a chance to look at your site very briefly, but what type of – I wanted to go back to the children's program. What type of programming would children find on your station, and what is it that they're most interested in?
Well, our children's programming is our newest programming. So right now we have probably 17 regular magazines that we're featuring, and then we're adding three new titles very soon. But they would get something like Scholastic News, Ask, Ranger Rick or Ranger Rick Jr. And then we also do titles that are for older students like Muse, trying to think of some others that are up there. Imagine is another magazine. We also do one Spanish title called Iguana. And all of the magazines that we've identified are all award-winning magazines, you know, children's magazines. So that's what
any
they would
comic
get
books?
Right now. Pardon me?
Any comic books?
No, that would be a lot of audio description. But I will tell
I'm sure
you,
it would, yeah.
We're launching a new program for schools. And what we're doing, though, is we are, we've received generous funding from two very wonderful foundations, the Hartford Foundation for Public Giving and the Gibney Family Foundation. And what we're doing with this, we're creating a custom recording opportunity for educators so that if their students need, let's say their students need access to the Gettysburg Address, it's part of the Common Core curriculum that 46 states have signed on to. And let's say there's a student in eighth grade that cannot read at grade level, is not able to, might have a learning disability, dyslexia or whatever, and cannot really get through the Gettysburg Address, we will have on our website an audio version of the Gettysburg Address. So what we're doing now is we are beginning to create an audio library of academic requirements according to this Common Core curriculum that 46 states have signed on to. And so that other schools that subscribe to CRIS and they want to be part of it, they can actually, it'll be like a library, they can access any one of these audio recordings unlimited whenever they want.
Wow.
It'll be all on
that
demand.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Are you in touch with special, the new commissioner for the State Department of Ed, or talking to the special ed teachers regarding these things?
Well, you know what? We started rolling this out in November, and we're actually offering a trial, free trials to various schools on the condition that they provide this service to at least 5 students within their school.
Uh-huh.
And but those 5 students also have to follow through with a summer school program, because what we're trying to do is track the outcomes. And there's a lot of brain science research right now, and there's a lot of other AV research that's been out for years that does show that children who are unable to read due to some type of print handicap, dyslexia, whatever cause prevents them from being able to read, that audio versions of their academic units, if they follow along, and it has to be oftentimes a human narration, they will actually, their reading levels will increase significantly for the kids that are at the lowest quadrant of their class. So this is sort of an exciting opportunity.
Well, Diane, I'm wondering at this juncture, now that you say that, have you convinced Governor Malloy to come over and help you? Because a lot of people in Connecticut may know, he experienced dyslexia as a child and overcame that and became a prosecutor, an attorney, and a big city mayor, and now the governor of the state. And I think he'd be a wonderful addition to help you out. I'm just going to say that here and now. Maybe you'll be listening.
Well, and actually, he recently just gave us a nice comment when we expanded our services to the Connecticut Children's Medical Center just recently. It's the first hospital in the nation to receive audio versions of Kids Magazine streamed to each patient's TV in each patient bed patient room, and so. He was really happy that we were offering that service, because the children that are patients, sometimes even if they're not blind or print handicapped, but when they're receiving medical treatment, oftentimes it can't interfere with their ability to read or turn pages. So we would consider them, maybe it might be a temporary situation, but still though, they're missing out on, you know, the opportunity to read. And so he was very happy about that and thought that was a significant new service that we were offering. And that was just 2 weeks ago. So,
I wish you'd had that years ago, because I was brought up in hospitals having vocal cord surgeries and orthopedic surgeries, and I spent my life in Newington Children's Hospital and Harper Hospital.
Yeah.
And to you know, there's only so many potholders and comb cases you can make, and then you get bored.
Exactly.
So, you know,
I know.
It would have been wonderful to have had that when I was a little kid. But, you know, this is just wonderful, and I think it's just so commendable that you're expanding in this way. And so you had a big event that you kicked off, wasn't it, at the Children's Hospital with the Lieutenant Governor, is that right?
That's right. The Lieutenant Governor attended. And also, too, I want to tell you, we've had a lot of collaborative partners. Comcast donated some of the equipment, and some foundations donated the equipment. But a big part of why we are able to expand now is the internet. So because we were able to, through the cable system, the hospital's in-house system, we were able to stream our children's content directly to their in-house system. And then from there, it was disseminated to each patient's room. So that's serving more than 9,000 children who are discharged from that hospital each year. And we did have a wonderful event to kick this off last Monday, not this past Monday, but the Monday before. There were about 32 different folks there, including some of our funders. And it was really a thrill for us.
Wow, that sounds so neat. Can you tell us if if there are, I know you're helping out Vermont, but if there are other people listening, and, you know, occasionally we do have international people listening, Diane.
Yes, we do.
If, say, somebody listening in Massachusetts or California, wherever, and they're thinking, oh, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, which it is, how would they, you know, could you explain to them how they would go about at least creating the framework for a reader service? What goes into it?
Well, I'll tell you, this is really, you mean to start a radio reading service from scratch? First of all, you need the equipment. This is actually a very expensive operation if you need to purchase all of this broadcast equipment and to start with. And not only do you need state-of-the-art digital broadcast equipment and all the microphones and all the recording studios, you know, you also need partners. And we have a number of partners that we've established over the 34 years, thanks to all of our predecessors who led Chris Radio prior to me coming on board. So we have a relationship with Comcast in the state and the Connecticut Television Network. So we're able to actually broadcast through the second audio program channel on cable TV. And, you know, we're also broadcasting on numerous subcarrier radio frequencies throughout the state as well. So it would be, for other states to launch a radio reading service would be difficult. And what's really happened, the reality is that when the recession hit, about 15 to 20 radio reading services had to close their doors in the country.
Oh, wow.
There were about 115, and now they're probably about 95. So it's unfortunate, but even though it's volunteer-driven, you still have the overhead of the IT costs and the broadcast costs. So it would be difficult. However, if there are states or schools out there or hospitals that want our service, all they have to do is email me at dwdunne@chrisradio.org, and we will be happy to see what we can do to provide them the service.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's fantastic.
Wow.
And actually provide the service all over the country.
Absolutely. Actually, and right now we are in talks with some national partners to see if we can begin to bring the children's programming to other hospitals throughout the nation. Nobody's providing that service. So that's especially with human narration. You know, when you go around and talking to teachers, the first thing they say is, is this text-to-speech or is this really a person recording it? And I always say, no, we have live people. So, and it's an important factor.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Can you speak to what does it take to become a radio reader in terms of the criteria, besides having the dedication and the time and probably a decent radio voice, you know, because I imagine there might be some people that would like to, but they may, for whatever reason, not be appropriate. And are there particular criteria?
Well, one thing that we do, we actually train all of our volunteer readers. And one important consideration is that we ask people to commit for at least 1 year of service. And that's either 1 hour a week or 4 hours a month. So it is a commitment. And frankly, we have so many dedicated volunteers that there is actually a waiting list to become a reader. However, recently, though, we were looking for bilingual volunteers, and everybody has to get auditioned. They have to be able to be, they must be articulate. They must be able to read clearly. And once they pass the audition, then they go into training, and then they get scheduled. By and large, though, our volunteers are very, very dedicated, and people generally, unless they're relocating, they don't leave us, you know, unless there's something comes up with their job and they're no longer able to provide the time.
Now, are they all retired, majority retired people at, you know, have gone on from their own, you know, professional careers?
No. We have a wide variety of volunteers. In fact, we have one group who are ESPN actually had created a partnership with Chris Radio in the last 2 years, and they created a an employee satellite for called Team ESPN, and they're recording their magazine, ESPN the magazine, and Deportes, which is the version in Spanish. So that's very cool. But those folks are all, the age range is diverse, you know, from young adults to people who are, you know, mature mm-hmm. in their career.
Yeah, and it's my understanding that from years ago, the Connecticut School of Broadcasting itself is what, you know, was started and is one of the best in the country in terms of training people to be on broadcast radio. So have you gotten requests from, you know, since you were an adjunct faculty member, you know, with respect to radio communication, saying, well, what's this all about, and could we somehow interface with this as part of the training for our students?
You know, we do get requests for internships and things like that, and we're very selective with the internships, and the reason why is we are only 3 full-time people at Chris Radio. We have 3 part-time right. people, 3 full-time people. So for us to train an intern and have that person turn over in 12 weeks or how many weeks the semester is, it's really an endeavor. So we do take on interns, and we have a program that we accept one intern in the summer program. But mm-hmm. By and large, it's sort of limited because we are truly very, very busy.
Right. You're a skeleton crew. Right.
We are.
I understand. I commend you. When I walked in there to, you know, bring my business cards over or whatever, everyone was behind the scenes. So you wear many hats. I know that for sure. What can you talk a bit about the aspect that it's 24/7 there? Are you having, you know, people come in at, you know, midnight to 3 and read their things and record, or, you know, is it all recorded, you know, at various time schedules given your volunteers' routine?
Right. Well, actually, we have a lot of volunteers that come in very early in the morning, like at 7 o'clock. We have some rush times, you know. Folks will come in before they go to work. We have people that come in, a lot of people come in after they're done with their work day. And then, again, we have people that come in on the weekends. Folks usually aren't there at midnight, but they are there after in the evening. We do have volunteers there in the evening and on the weekends. And thank goodness, because otherwise it would just be too time intensive, and we would not have the budget to actually be able to have to hire these people to record like the Sunday newspaper, for example. So we're just very fortunate and blessed to have so much dedication.
Yeah, that's for sure. Do they have some degree of freedom or choice in terms of the content, or, you know, does a man come in there and say, well, I'm not going to read Women's Day, I don't like that, I want to read Popular Mechanics or something?
Well, not really.
No.
Well, I mean, if they have a preference, you know, I think we do try to, within the magazines that we have, but what we try to do is, honestly, we try to read exactly what is there in the printed version. We try, you know, to say, obviously we can't read everything cover to cover, you know, all the time, but so obviously there might be a little selection, but we always try to go with the lead articles first, the cover stories first, and all the top articles. And then if there's any wiggle room, if there's still some time in their half-hour program, why, you know, they might be able to select an article based on time. So let's mm-hmm. say you have another 3 to 5 minutes left. Maybe they will select a very small article, and it might be one in the back of the magazine or something. But that's about it for leeway. By and large, it's we read exactly what's in print.
And do they describe the graphics?
We do try to describe the graphics. For example, the cover story, let's say the cover of the Hartford Courant this morning, the folks that are recording the live program, they will describe the cover photo, and they will describe it. Let's say there's a young man here with holding a flag, and his name is so such and such. They would go ahead and audio describe it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
That would be sort of how it works. But I want to tell you about some other really exciting programs we're also launching.
Sure.
We're launching Chris in Spanish. And we already have a soft launch on it, but which means that it's available on a toll-free telephone number so people can call in and hear some Spanish language magazines. And what we're finding is in Connecticut, there's actually, again, trying to fill unmet needs, we're finding that there's a larger population of folks who are Spanish-speaking and unable to see, have visual disabilities. And so we're trying to provide them with Spanish language magazine articles, and also there are some local newspapers in Connecticut that feature news in Spanish.
For,
so we're also
culture,
trying to reach.
Yeah.
And there's another very exciting program. We're doing another program called Chris Access, and Chris Access is a project where we integrate QR codes, which are I don't know if your listeners know what a QR code is, but it's sort of like a little square box, and it looks like it's
like a
UPC
snowflake.
Code.
I don't know what it is, but it looks like a snowflake or something to me.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you
By the way, what are those things? You know those better than I do.
I think you both described it well.
Really?
I know what a QR code is, but if you don't know what a QR code is, it does. It looks like a snowflake, a square one. But
what's the purpose? What do they do? Or they just identify you in a different way? Is that right?
Well,
no,
actually, what you do is you use a smartphone and you can scan it, or the phone basically takes a picture of this.
Okay.
And in our case, it gets you immediately to an audio version of some type of information, so that you can scan it and you can hear this audio information instantly. So that's what we're using it for. But it's called a quick response code, and it's exactly that. It's a quick response code. You scan it, and you're at that website, and in our case, that website is going to provide audio information for you. And we've done this. We're about to launch a pilot at two museums for people who are unable to read the printed information at the exhibit. So one would be that this QR code scans the information so that provides an audio version of what the printed text is displayed at that exhibit. But in addition, we provide an audio description of the museum exhibit, as well as provide brief bits of information about the tactile opportunities for people visiting the exhibit so that they can have more information about how to experience that museum. Yeah.
So
we're
for
really
example, if you were at the Mystic Aquarium or something, or the Children's Museum, whatever, the Connecticut Children's Science Center, which I haven't gotten to yet, I really want to go. but you if you had that technology right there, they'd be able to scan it and tell you all about the exhibit they're featuring.
Exactly, that's our goal, and we're basing our pilot. This again is a pilot, and it's funded by a private foundation. But the Connecticut Science Center is one of the projects, the pilots that we're going to be doing. But we've already done a project with a Massachusetts museum called Old Sturbridge Village, and we've identified seven exhibits there. And
can you tell for our listeners what Old Sturbridge Village is a little bit? I mean, I'm very familiar with it, but.
Old Sturbridge Village is a historical living museum. So when you go there, all the buildings are from what I understand, mid-1800s. And the folks who are there that are working there are all dressed in accurate
traditional garb.
Yes, exactly. So they'll have a schoolhouse. They have a schoolhouse, a town meeting house, from dating back to that era. So that's why with the QR code, it's fixed right to the signage at each exhibit. A person can scan it, and they will hear instantly that audio version of what that sign says, and then provide some additional information for them.
You know, that's just great. It only augments, just in the past few years, too. I believe Massachusetts has been a forerunner with Braille Nature Trails, and being able to have Braille signage along the routes if people who are visually impaired or blind want to follow walking paths and experience what's going on in nature. So this, you know, it just keeps growing, Diane. It's really exciting.
It's really an exciting time for what we're trying to do. And, you know, technology is a big part of this. You know, years ago, the only technology we had were broadcast frequencies. Now there's internet frequencies, and now there's everything 4G, and, you know, you have all kinds of access through smartphones and mobile devices. So it is an exciting time. One of the things that we've been able to do at CRISP is use internet radios now, and it has allowed us to begin serving people who reside in assisted living homes or nursing homes. So we've added another 5,000 people that we serve just through this endeavor through these internet radios. And an internet radio looks like a regular radio, but it's actually a small computer that is able to pick up an internet signal, either wireless signal or wired signal, and then we stream directly to that radio, and the quality of the broadcast is incredibly good. So that's another thing that technology is allowing us to do.
So you're working with various short-term and long-term care facilities in Connecticut to introduce that?
Exactly, yes. So that's exactly what we've done, and we've added a terrific person to the CRIS as a part-time staff and outreach coordinator who's helping us achieve that.
Mm-hmm. So when you go to new partners like that, are you having to first wait for a sponsor like the, you know, the Corporation for Hartford Foundation for Giving, I'm sorry, I'm messing up the name.
Hartford Foundation for Public Giving.
Yeah,
you're very close.
For Public Giving. I was very close. Do you have to wait for that sponsorship before you approach somebody for a new venture, or are you going in and saying, well, you know, this is how much it will cost, but yet if you can give us X amount of dollars, it will really enhance what you're able to do for the quality of life for your residents or whomever?
Right. Well, you know, what we've always done with our operating budget is we always allocated money for free radios. So we have always given away the radios for at no charge to our listeners for most of our history when we could afford it. And basically the foundations and the various organizations, including BESB, which contracts with us to provide our services for their consumers, is, you know, we give away these radios. It's part of what we do. The internet radios, even though they're like three times or four times the cost of a traditional broadcast radio, we continue to give these away at no charge to organizations. And then the foundations and our funders and even our individual donors see the value in this, and they provide us funding. So this is what makes it possible, are the donations.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Yeah.
Well, Diane, what about other informational programming? For instance, a program like this, where we bring useful information to your clients and what their needs are, not necessarily print materials or newspapers or magazines, but through conversations with very interesting guests like yourself. What kind of outreach do you have for something like that? Would someone, let's say, for instance, like Donna, be able to record this show and possibly, you know, you could take the show on and make it available for your listeners?
Sure. And actually, what we will do is we will we can actually add the show as an MP3 file to our listeners.
All right.
Yay.
I know, right? I liked you for some reason.
and we'll also put it in the general. It probably Chris in the news, so other folks can listen to the link once we talk to you, you know, after the show, and you send the link and all that business. But we also do original content as well. So we have a longtime volunteer called Stephen Thal. He is also a board member, and he hosts a live program called Focal Point. And the focus is basically information that's important to people who have a disability. Not necessarily blindness or a print handicap, any kind of disability. So he might talk about how can folks with disabilities ensure that they have an opportunity to vote in the elections, for example? And we will have informational things. We've done town hall forums on transportation. Right. A huge issue. So we've done a number of different kinds of pieces like that. We also do an original program, and it's actually hosted by our chairperson, Bill Austin, and it's about safety, about, you know, public safety, but about your individual safety in your home. For people with disabilities, safety is a big issue. How can you escape your home if it's on fire, for example?
Right. Emergency planning, that kind of thing, too, right?
Exactly, Donna. That's exactly right. Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's a very important aspect of what we also offer for service.
Right. I have to tell you that I worked very closely with Steve because he used to be a BESB employee, and mm-hmm. he sponsored the BESB Awards, which was like, if people aren't aware, it's like the Emmy Awards for people who are blind and visually impaired, and we had them at the state capitol, and I was lucky enough to be the chairperson a few years ago with Dr. Bill Pettit as the MC, and for many years I worked in concert with Steve, mostly doing those projects, so I know Steve well, and I respect him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and he really brings a wide variety of guests to Chris Radio and to mm-hmm. talk about different issues that, quite frankly, people who have sight or who do not have a disability don't take it for granted. They don't even think about, gee, I always vote. Why is there a problem? Well, there's a problem if you can't access the voting booth, or there's a problem if you can't see the ballot. So he really brings up issues that are that people without a disability might not even consider. So he really offers us a very important service, and also our listeners a very important service with his program.
Well, we've done, I would say, in a little over a year, Delilah, correct me if I'm wrong, I might have done about half a dozen shows on disability, per se, and, you know, perhaps we could interface with him and somehow, you know, exchange, because I think it would be very valuable for your audience as well. I don't know if it's possible, but
I think a lot of the information that you've brought forth, and just like you were talking earlier about the safety issues, I'm sure, you know, there's, just because someone is disabled or blind or whatever, there's still issues of domestic violence. They need to know the information is available to them, what to do, how to get out, how to plan their safety, who to call. So there's, as a public service almost, there's a just an absolute ton of information that could be made available.
Well, and, you know, Delilah, just mentioning even the domestic abuse, that's another huge issue. And the other thing that we're actually creating, there's another nonprofit in the greater Hartford area. It's actually a statewide organization. And they talk about addiction and alcohol recovery. And, mm-hmm. Again, you know, folks don't think about it, but, gee, this is another area that is an important area to discuss and bring out to our listeners.
Well, yeah. We eat, sleep, and breathe this stuff that we were talking about. So I think there's potential there, Diane. We'll have to talk later.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Really, I would love to. I never, in my wildest dreams, I always tell people I am so, every week they get tired of me saying this, but I feel so fortunate, so blessed to have this show, because this is an opportunity to have people, whether they are a survivor of crime, a family member, a service provider, they're offered a national voice here and getting the word out. And it's not about just particularly about a crime, but it's about the aftermath and what happens and what are the resources that are available. And, you know, I just couldn't work with better people than people like Delilah and other colleagues that I have here. So, you know, it's just, radio is great.
It really is. And actually, you really are sort of a journalist, and even though you're not writing articles.
Oh, I write a lot, if you look at my website.
But, I mean, with your radio program, it's not in the written word. But basically, you're interviewing people and asking them for information, and that's really what a journalist does. So you're sort of in my footsteps there, you know, as a journalist, you're doing what I used to previously do as a profession, which is a very exciting thing to do.
Well, that's now that you bring that up, it's funny you should say that. We have about 4 minutes left or so. I'm watching the clock here. Unfortunately, time's flying by. Maybe we can convince you to come back. Can you tell us, contrast your former life with this? What brought you to this? What made you decide to take on this as opposed to what you were doing? And you know, why do you really like doing this as opposed to what you were doing and what you continue to do as a journalist?
Sure. Well, actually, to really put it quickly, I absolutely love journalism, and I love that career. There was this point in my life where I was being interviewed for the position at Chris Radio, and my father at the time had been very ill, and he just really strongly recommended that he really wanted me to take this position. He said, you know, my entire career has been focused on access to information. When you're a journalist, you want to get the information out there to the public. You want to make a difference, and journalists are pretty idealistic. That was me. But my father was like, you know, Diane, I think you could really make a bigger difference by serving at Chris, and you will provide more access to more people. You can make a difference there, maybe more so than as an editor and as a reporter. And so it was sort of like a light switch went off, and I thought, all right, I'm going to make this huge career change, and I'm going to go to Chris. And I am so glad I did. Because it really, again, we're providing so much access and more access to for more people than we have in the past. And I'm just grateful to have, and honored to have the privilege to do this job.
Oh, yeah. I see the rewards every day in working at the agency where I do. And this is a whole different kettle of fish, as they say, but it has very different rewards. And like I say, with having a personal passion or a reason behind, because of my dad having being involved in a homicide, it gives you your mission. And so for the last 2 minutes or so, can you talk about what and hopefully you're going to continue your reign, as they say. And can you talk about what goals you may see for the future? I know you're continually working on new projects, but what would you like to get accomplished specifically?
Well, you know, right now we have three brand new pilots that we're launching. One is Chris Kids for Schools, Chris in Spanish, and Chris Access. So what we want to do is actually create a national model for audio access for various organizations, including educators. So right now what we're doing is we're trying to develop these new programs, get them off the ground for the Chris Kids for Schools. What we are intending to do is begin to record the text exemplars that are part of the Common Core curriculum for most of the United States, 46 states have signed on. So what we want to do is provide these audio versions of, you know, academic information. We want to provide a model for museums that are an affordable model that so that their folks who are visitors to their museum can really have a full experience with audio access in the event they are unable to read the printed word. And again, for Chris in Spanish, it's another sector of the population who have not been receiving audio access. So that's our goal,
so
is to build these as a national model.
Yes, that is. And, you know, I just am so impressed, and I'm so glad that we have had this time together. Unfortunately, oh, I'm just sounding like Carol Burnett there. I'm sorry. But thank you so much for your time this evening. Please let's keep in touch, and maybe we could do a project in the future. And I'll have to sign off for now and say thank you. Thank you for appearing, Delilah. Thank you so much. And for my audience,
you're very welcome.
Please stay tuned for the upcoming blog in the next 24 hours. We'll circulate it, and we'll see you. We'll see you next Saturday. Thank you, Delilah. Good night. And that's the answer.